This is Audible.
Random House Audio presents Star Wars, Fate of the Jedi, Outcast, by Aaron Alston. Read for you by Mark Thompson. Chapter 16. Calrissian Nunba Mines, Kessel.
Where's Uncle Han?
Chance, sitting beside Alana at the gleaming white cafeteria table, rhythmically kicked the underside of the tabletop.
Not back yet.
Alana paid him no attention. Her gaze was on Tendra and Lando, who sat alone at an adjacent table, whispering urgently to each other. She glared at them. While Nana prepared dinner in the adjoining cavernously empty personnel kitchen, Nian Numba waited in the communications room for a call from Han and Leia, and Chance was busy being a toddler. The Calrissians, it was clear, were discussing the Solo's fate, but not doing anything about it. Alana spoke in tones so low they couldn't hear her.
They're not dead, you know. I'd have felt it. Where's Aunt Leia? Not back yet.
Chance's kicks grew more energetic. Alana felt like joining him in punishing the table. Finally, she raised her voice.
Why don't we go looking for them?
Lando and Tendra looked her way. Lando flashed her a smile she knew was supposed to be reassuring. She resented him for it.
We're not sure that it would do any good at the moment, sweetie, he told her. We're trying to figure out what to do next.
We should just go down there and look. I'm really good at looking.
She saw Lando suppress a shudder.
Amelia, do you know what a transceiver is?
She nodded.
It's like a comlink, except you talk into comlinks, and you don't talk into all transceivers.
Right. Your mommy and daddy are carrying several transceivers, some of which they don't even know about, in their speeder, in their equipment.
I know about tracking devices, too.
She shot him a suspicious look.
You put tracking devices on them?
Of course. Comm signals don't go very far in the mines. They don't go through stone. So I had special transceivers put in their gear that communicate with the seismic sensors we've got all over the tunnels. A while ago, after we stopped receiving signals and we had that ground shake, your Aunt Tendra and I did go down to look.
Why didn't you tell me? I would have gone with you.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a lot of fallen stone between us and Han and Leia right now. We have to dig through to them.
And none of our miners are here right now,
Tendra added.
Most of them are away on paid leave. We've sent out word asking for volunteers.
Well, until they get here, we can...
We can stay here, Lando said, sounding stern for the first time in the conversation.
He fixed her with a stare, and when she did not reply, he turned back to Tendra.
I could find them,
Alana whispered.
What's that, Miss Amelia?
C-3PO, dithering beside R2-D2 on the other side of the table, leaned forward as if it would help his audio receptors pick up her words. She gave the droid a resentful look.
Nothing.
R2-D2 tweedled, a lengthy statement for him. Alana glanced at C-3PO for a translation. The protocol droid leaned toward her again.
He says he approves very highly of adventuresome young girls being adventuresome young girls. But not this time.
Alana sighed.
Ninth Hall of Justice, Coruscant.
She was the same falling judge who had handed down Luke Skywalker's sentence, and she was identically impassive now.
It is the determination of this court that Jedi Valen Horn is not competent to stand trial for his actions in the above-named suit.
At the back of the chamber, standing among the handful of Jedi who had been allowed into the packed courtroom, Jaina heaved a sigh of relief. This was good news. Valen would not be going to trial after all. The judge's next words shattered her misapprehension.
This court has further determined that the defendant, because of the extraordinarily dangerous nature of his abilities and the overt criminality of his mental illness, is too dangerous to be confined in any conventional facility. For this reason, he will be detained through carbonite imprisonment until such time as...
Her words might as well have been an unexpected reversal in a crucial bolo ball game. Suddenly, half the observers in the court were on their feet, the Jedi and friends of the Jedi among them shouting protests, the press standing tall or even getting up on benches, the better to holorecord the proceedings. Nawara Venn, alone at the defendant's table, was roaring to make himself be heard above the crowd.
Your Honor, this is an outrageous violation of my client's rights, of the rights of all citizens.
The judge pressed a button on her bench. A musical note, like a nautical ship's warning bell, sounded through the chamber. It was just loud enough to be painful to those with normal hearing. As the shouts continued, she pressed it again and again, each time creating a louder tone, until all the chamber was silent, most of those present covering their ears or tympanic membranes. The judge glanced around the chamber, her expression cool.
Would everyone who desires a month in jail on a charge of contempt of court please speak up?
No one spoke. Few were even daring enough to lower their hands from their ears. The judge gestured for everyone to sit. All did, except those who, like Jaina, had found no empty seats.
To continue. He will be detained through carbonite imprisonment until such time as a treatment for his condition, based on evaluation of his test data, can be determined. He will be brought out of carbonite stasis at intervals as new and relevant tests, as well as periodic mental evaluations, are ordered. He will be brought out not less often than twice per standard year, regardless of test and evaluation concerns. That concludes this hearing.
Her movements brisk, perhaps irritated, she rose. The advocates and onlookers did as well. When she was gone, voices erupted again. This time, the press hurling questions at the advocates, the Jedi, and the Horns. Jaina ignored the heartfelt but irrelevant complaints of the Jedi around her. She watched Corin and Mirax Horn embracing in their shared misery. Watched as the forbidding stare of Master Saba Sebatine kept the members of the press from approaching them. Watched as Nawara Venn sat again at his table, slumped in temporary defeat, shoulders knotted in frustration and anger. And she was struck by a sense of foreboding. They're all killers, she thought. Jedi and combat pilots and smugglers, killers all, who waged war for the New Republic or who killed to stop the Yuuzhan Vong. The government is turning this situation into a war, and the people they're offending, beneath the surface, are killers, myself included. This can't end well.
Unexplored depths, Kessel.
The speeder plummeted into darkness. The underside almost immediately slammed into a slab of rock angled at about 45 degrees to their descent. The repulsors, over-revving themselves to compensate, bounced the speeder away from the slab and flipped it. In the beams of the headlights, Han saw rock seemingly spin around him as the speeder rolled. He clicked the repulsors off the standard setting and brought them up toward full strength, trying to slow the speeder's descent and eventually hover. Then Leia shouted something he didn't understand. She was staring upward, and he could feel more than see the immense shelf of rock falling into the shaft after them. He killed the repulsors and fired the thrusters, rocketing the speeder straight down the shaft. In the spare second he had before further action was required, he flipped the repulsors to collision reduction, a forward projection that would reduce the severity of the crash when they hit. They entered a huge cavern, or perhaps a tunnel, for it was of an almost constant diameter, more than 100 meters, and there were faint glows to the right and left. He flipped over to normal flight mode and rolled to starboard. The sensor screamed that a collision with the floor was imminent. He'd almost managed to pull out of the dive when the front portions of the speeder smashed into the stone floor. They hit at an oblique angle, a life-saving circumstance. The impact was powerful, slamming the two of them forward in their restraints, but the speeder continued forward, bouncing like a flat stone being skipped across a pond. The repulsors kicked off. The speeder hit again, jarring Han's spine, and bounced up again in Kessel's low gravity. Then it hit a third time and stayed down, skidding forward for another 40 meters or more. They stopped, but the thundering noise of descending stone didn't. Well behind them, an avalanche of rocks, boulders, and billowing dust poured out of the ceiling, creating an enormous hill directly beneath the hole through which they had fallen. Hurried but detached, Han went through his emergency checklist. Leia, unhurt, unstrapping herself, checking for her lightsaber. Himself? Minor pains in neck and arms, nothing significant. Control board? Dark. Sensors? Off. Odors? Recycled air. Nothing toxic. No sign that the recyclers were still functioning. He let out his breath for the first time since the floor had dropped away. He unstrapped.
Be ready to run in case more of the ceiling drops.
She gave him a look no other person could have interpreted. Half appreciation for his concern, half aggravation that he was telling her things she was already prepared to do. The air around them dimmed as the outer edges of the dust cloud rolled over them. But the noise of the avalanche diminished. A few moments later, it was reduced to the sound of an occasional rock tumbling onto the mound, and stony grumbling as the mound itself settled. Carefully, quietly, Han and Leia emerged from the speeder. There was no pop of the atmosphere seal breaking as they did so. The speeder's frame must have twisted, ruining seal integrity during their crash. Leia found a powerful glow lamp in the jumble of equipment in the back seat. She snapped it on and played it toward the cavern ceiling. Though weak at this range, the beam showed that the hole in the ceiling was no more. It was plugged by jagged chunks of stone, some of them weighing dozens or hundreds of tons.
Great, Han said.
He moved to the front of the speeder and opened the engine compartment.
Hey, any landing you can walk away from is a good one, Leia said.
He offered a derisive snort.
That's survivor talk. A pilot says any landing you can't fly away from is a failure.
You did all right.
I know I did. It was this archaic piece of junk that let us down.
He shook his head over the state of the engine and slammed the compartment closed. Then he gave the side of the speeder a savage kick.
That good?
Yeah. I hope you like walking, lady.
Han, you may have noticed in the distance some light sources.
Probably phosphorescent lures of an infinite number of giant carnivorous tunnel beetles.
She laughed at him, then began pulling equipment from the back seat.
Let's gear up for a hike.
Half an hour later, they looked out over a new and different world. It was the source of the light they had seen down the tunnel past the mound of fallen stone. Leia had judged it to be closer, so they had headed in that direction. The walk had been easy, though they had all but emptied the gear from the speeder, and Han had taken turret gun grenades besides. In Kessel's gravity, the 60 or so kilos of gear he was packing was a comparatively comfortable load. The approach to the point where lofting tunnel met vast cavern was a rise. Han and Leia had to clamber up a steep climb of stone some 3 meters high before they could look into the cavern beyond. The size of a city, the cavern was lined with great blocks of manufactured equipment, each block the size of a human habitation. Some were as large as 3-level houses, some the size of 10-story apartment buildings, and all were thick with colored lights, some constant, some blinking regularly or intermittently. The faces of the equipment blocks were broken down into rectangles of different colors of metal. But at this distance, Han could not tell whether they were merely decorative touches or if the rectangles were access hatches. In addition to the indicators on the equipment, there was light from above and below. The ceiling of the chamber had patches of greenish material, possibly organic, that exuded a soft blue-green glow. The floor was bare of equipment and was littered, though not thickly, with greenish round-capped fungi, some of which stood taller than Han. Light from all of these sources blended together into the dim, pale glow Han and Leia had seen from so far away. The vista of machinery, fungi, and cavern walls went on as far as the eye could see, kilometers at least. Leia reached over and gently pressed up on Han's jaw under his breath mask, closing his mouth. Lando has no idea what he's sitting on, does he? Han shook his head.
If all of this shut down tomorrow, just the scrap value would make him a richer man.
But what's it for?
Let's find out.
Hitching up her pack, she walked down into the cavern. They divided their duties naturally and without discussion. Leia investigated the machinery. Han kept his eye out for predatory life forms. Within a few minutes' walk, they reached the first bank of machinery on the right-hand sloping wall of the cavern. First in their path was a cabinet-like structure the size of a warehouse. Its panels, mostly black, gleamed with what looked like thousands of small rectangular lights. Leia put her hands on her hips and stared up at the thing.
Where to start?
Something's powering it, if it doesn't have some sort of internal reactor. There's probably a series of cables entering it somewhere. And unless it's doing whatever it does in isolation, it's receiving or sending data, by cable, by broadcast, somehow.
At nearly ground level, a bogey emerged from the face of the machine. It hovered there, a few meters from Han and Leia, and emitted a faint chittering noise, like a whole colony of curious insects.
Or maybe I have no idea what I'm talking about, Han said.
City of Dorshan, Doran.
Fresh from the Jade Shadow's Sanisteam and dressed in a clean robe, Ben joined his father in the main cabin. Dinner consisted of prepackaged meals, heated in the yacht's tiny pulse oven. But Ben was all right with that. The Nerf loaf, tuber mash, and seasoned greens in the individual compartments of the tray reminded him of food from home. Bad food from home.
So,
his father said, what did you learn today?
A little bit about the difference between the way skinny limbs with dense leather muscles move compared with human arms and legs. That's about it. Oh, and you know that thing where the sages decide it's time to die, and they just will themselves to do it?
Luke nodded.
One of the Baron Doe masters has decided to do that. Char Se Saul, the senior combat instructor. He worked with Tistura Pon and me today.
Did you talk to him about it?
Ben nodded.
I didn't, you know, just blurt it out. Why have you decided to die, or anything like that? But Tistura Pon had some questions about his ceremony tomorrow. She was pretty sad. She was his special student. He gave her a data card with his memoirs and instruction manuals on it. He'd just finished it.
What did you ask him?
Well, I said that from the human perspective, it was always sad when a good person died, when he took his knowledge with him. He said he was leaving his knowledge behind. I asked if he had family, and he said he would be seeing them again someday, by which I took it he meant they were already dead.
He plans to die tomorrow.
Ben nodded.
Luke frowned.
What?
Turn of phrase.
But Luke said no more on the subject.
What did you learn today, Dad?
I learned to make a ball float at a constant altitude, but not to make it be still.
You had an exciting day.
I also learned that there's something about Jason's visit here, or about the former Masters of the Sages, that Tai Lamong doesn't want me to know. That was probably the hidden thought I kept feeling last night.
Once you've figured out the scanner blanking technique and you've pried all of Tai Lamong's secrets out, where are we going next?
Luke shrugged.
We'll have to take that as we come to it.
Chapter 17. Unexplored Depths, Kessel.
Han watched Leia as, unafraid, she approached the bogey. Unlike the previous one, this creature did not retreat at her approach, but hung in the air as if watching her. She came within a meter of it, and still it did not move, though its chittering grew louder, and the lights within it swirled even faster.
Leia, be careful.
Torn between a need to know what was happening with his wife, and an equally strong need to know they were not being crept up on, Han kept switching his attention from the tableau with the bogey to the surrounding machinery and field of fungi.
I don't sense any hostile intent, or for that matter, any life.
Leia raised a hand as if to touch the bogey. Her hand penetrated its outer boundaries. Colorful lights swirled around her fingers, as if they were the center of some new maelstrom. Leia's hair rose, standing on end, and a crackling noise joined the chittering Han heard.
Leia, keep talking.
It's all right. I'm not hurt.
There was some strain to her voice, as if she was making an effort of exertion or concentration.
It's...
What?
Han heard a note that was almost a yelp in his voice.
A data card.
She swayed backward, almost falling, and the action broke her contact with the bogey. Abruptly, it zoomed away, straight up. Han put a hand on Leia's shoulder to steady her. He watched the bogey ascend. Several moments later, it hit the ceiling and vanished into the rock there. Han breathed a sigh of relief. Leia straightened, shaking her head to clear it.
That was interesting.
What did you mean, it was a data card?
That was what it reminded me of. I think that was something like its function. I could sense a reservoir of energy within it, and the ability to communicate, and a big store of data. Fresh data. From this device, I think.
She gestured at the building-sized cabinet.
I saw a three-dimensional pattern of, I don't know what to call them, intensities. Thousands. Millions. It had a mission, an intent to go somewhere and deliver the data. There was something else, too. A sense of futility.
You got a lot out of that contact.
Its whole purpose is communication. And not with me, not with anything like us. It helped a lot that I was trying to do what it was meant to do. I need to find another one. A lot more of them. Learn more from each one.
Energetic again, she set off at a brisk walk along the row of immense cabinets, holding her right arm out as she did as if to wave more bogeys out of the machines she passed. Han shook his head and followed. Han saw things on that walk, some of which were fascinating, and some of which he preferred not to have seen. There was animal life in the cavern, moving among the fungi. He cataloged at least two different species of centipede-like creatures, one about a meter long and green, the other about 2 meters long and a dangerous-looking red and yellow. Both species had vicious-looking stingers at their tail ends. He saw the larger centipedes attack, sting, and eat the smaller ones. He also saw small avian things, like miniature hawk bats, swoop upon both species of centipedes and snatch things from their backs. Only when he drew out his macro binoculars and trained them on one of those flying attacks did he realize that the avian was taking young centipedes riding on the backs of the older ones. The fungi were also prey to animal life. Some looked chewed on around the periphery of their caps, but others had defenses. When a green centipede went crawling across the cap of one of the fungi, the cap collapsed, rolling up on itself and trapping the centipede within. That fungus did not unroll in all the time it took Han to walk out of sight of it, and he did not care to think about the digestive processes now going on within it. He just vowed not to touch any fungus caps as he passed them. 2 kilometers into the hike, he saw the energy spider. He stopped abruptly, the air leaving his lungs. Leia must have sensed his distress. She turned to look at him, then followed his gaze. 70 meters away, its body the size of an airspeeder, it rose from within a tall clump of fungi, glassy and transparent, at least 15 legs on a side, formidable pincers up front. Its head swiveled as it surveyed its surroundings. Slowly, so as not to attract attention, Han slid the slug-throwing rifle off his shoulder strap, lowering it to the ground, and put his hands on the grenade launcher. He'd start with a decoy grenade. If that didn't work, he'd switch to high explosives, then go to the rifle if the spider got nearer. The spider took a couple of steps in Han's direction, clambering up on an especially large fungus as if to get some altitude to see better. Then it settled down on the fungus cap. The skin of the fungus beneath its body began to turn black, withering away.
It's eating fungus, Leia said. That's not very aggressive. You do that.
It's different.
Now that his initial burst of panic was subsiding, Han could see that there were differences between this creature and the energy spider he had seen, the ones he had read about in Nian Nunba's communiques. Instead of being blue, with little flares of light glistening within its transparisteel-like skin, this one was more of a crimson color. Its legs were not festooned with all the claws and blades the spice spiders possessed. And of course, it was not charging at him.
A related species. Maybe herbivorous.
Leia remained irritatingly unafraid.
Maybe omnivorous, and willing to add a couple of humans to its snack list.
Han reshouldered his rifle.
Come on. Let's get out of here. Maybe it's an out-of-sight, out-of-mind predator.
All right. They moved on, Han keeping a sharp eye on the spider. But it never rose from the perch it was feeding upon, never turned their way. It did not even pay attention to the centipedes moving across the tops of adjacent fungi, and realizing that, only then was Han half certain the thing had to be disinterested in animal life. Another kilometer farther on, Leia made a noise of surprise. Another bogey emerged. This one from a silver-gray structure, the size of the building where the Solos kept their quarters on Coruscant. It had a darker color scheme. Its lights a more muted arrangement of violets and reds. The noise it made was quite musical, like a harp being played by a Kowakian monkey lizard. Leia did not hesitate, but approached it and brushed her hand across its outer nimbus. Again, she crackled with static electricity. Again, her hair stood out in a display that suggested electrocution.
Start talking, Princess. I need to know that you're not unconscious on your feet.
Looking, she said, her tone distant. Variables, unimaginable numbers of them. Maintaining?
Maintaining what?
Reluctantly, Han turned his back on Leia and the bogey, once again keeping guard against the sea of fungi and the life forms within it.
I don't know. The data will be lost. Cycle ending. Cycle winding down.
That had an ominous sound to it. But Han was distracted by something in the distance. If they were following a north-south wall, and he had no reason to believe they were, for the speeder's sensors were long gone, but he called it north-south because he had to call it something of his own, then off at an angle, maybe a kilometer away due northwest, there was something in the middle of the fungus field. It looked like a mound of, he wasn't sure, steel barrels, lashed together like an improvised fuel dump in a wartime encampment.
Center point! Oh!
Leia gasped. Han turned to see her staggering back, the musical bogey disappearing into the stone at their feet. Han grabbed her, held her upright while she recovered.
Why did you say center point?
I saw center point station, as clear as a hollow.
Her eyes darted back and forth as she reviewed what she just experienced.
Han, that image I had before, the millions of random intensities?
Yeah.
Gravity wells, I'm sure of it. A galaxy's worth of gravity wells.
Huh. Is this thing one gigantic astronomical observatory?
Maybe.
She straightened, recovered, but did not break his embrace.
But for what purpose?
Centerpoint Station was all about gravity. Its super tractor beam was gravitic in nature.
Han glanced along the seemingly endless row of machinery.
Could this be from the same makers? The so-called Celestials? It doesn't look that old.
Neither did Centerpoint.
Han gestured at the distant mound of barrels.
Something different to look at.
Let's eat first. Communing with energy blobs is hard work.
Half an hour later, fortified by travel rations, they reached the mound. Traveling through the fungus forest to get there had not been safe. Most of the life forms fled at their approach, but the red and yellow centipedes were aggressive and fast-moving. Fortunately, they were also loud, skittering forward with all the subtlety of a 2-year-old flying a speeder bike. Han shot two before they approached closer than 10 meters, and Leia cut one in half with her lightsaber when it reared up over the fungus ahead of them. And then they were there, at the foot of the apparatus Han had seen. It rested on a disc of something like durasteel, 6 meters in diameter and a meter thick. Rising from that was a central pole with something like a broad sensor antenna stretching out from it. The antenna was curved like a dish. Given the way it was situated, Han was certain it was meant to rotate. Piled up against the back of the dish, strapped to it by metal cabling, were the numerous barrel-like objects he had seen, each large enough to hold a full-grown bantha. The whole structure towered some 15 meters into the air. Leia looked at him.
He shrugged. You got me.
Hey!
Leia's deactivated lightsaber suddenly stretched out toward the apparatus, as if leaping toward it, and she staggered in that direction. So did Han. it was as though his weapons and backpack were suddenly caught in a tractor beam, dragging him along. Then the pull ceased. Resisting it, Han and Leia were abruptly stumbling in the other direction. Leia straightened.
Magnetic pulse. Why don't we,
move back a ways? Yeah.
They did so, observing the apparatus from what they felt was a safer distance, 30 meters. Han was unsurprised when a bogey emerged from the base of the apparatus.
Call for you, sweetie,
he said. Leia shot him a half-amused look and approached the bogey.
Ask it what the gizmo's for and if there's any good bars or clubs around here.
Your sense of humor is returning.
Ugh! She offered a little gasp as her hand came in contact with the bogey. Again, her hair whipped up into an electrocuted nimbus.
Draw in, she said. Push out. Deactivate. Next, next, next. Acceleration. Interaction.
Clearly pained, Leia kept up the contact.
Leia?
Not now, Han. I can see the sequence. They're everywhere. It's huge. Evaluations almost complete. Then, terminus.
Finally, she staggered back. This time she did fall, sprawling on the mulchy cavern floor, eyes open but glazed.
Leia!
Han knelt over her, torn between making sure she was unhurt and keeping a wary eye out for centipedes. He decided to rely on his ears for the latter danger and bent over his wife. She was panting, the meter on her breath mask indicating the increased demands on its processing, but her vision was clearing. She sat up almost as abruptly as she had fallen.
We've got to go.
Where?
The surface.
I knew that already.
A cold suspicion formed in Han's gut.
Why?
This cavern is going to blow up, and then another few, and then the rest, all at once. And that's the end for Kessel.
As they ran, she explained.
That antenna thing is an electromagnet, a super electromagnet. When it starts spinning, it will yank the machinery off the walls and drag it all to itself.
Not a chance. Across all those kilometers?
Han, the makers of this place might also have built Centerpoint Station. Remember how powerful it was?
Centerpoint's gravitic tractor could, in theory, move planets and suns, could collapse and destroy whole solar systems. Han didn't miss its presence in the universe.
Point taken. Super destructive.
No, that's only the start.
They charged through the fungi toward the nearest wall, almost heedless of the dangers. Leia had her lightsaber in hand, and twice had to cleave red and yellow centipedes as they struck at her. Once they raced by a fungus with a crimson spider atop. They were 10 meters past before the adrenaline hit Han and gave him a burst of speed, but the spider did not follow.
Those barrels are explosives, Leia continued. I didn't get a sense of how they functioned, whether they're protonic or nuclear or something we don't even understand. But when all the machinery is encrusted onto the antenna, they blow up and